Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Artificiell intelligens har fått ett ansikte. Roboten har tidigare varit placerad bakom galler i fabriksmiljöer. Men vi är på väg in i en tid och utveckling där robotar flyttar in i skolorna, på äldreboenden och slutligen även i våra hem. Yolanda Leite är biträdande professor vid institutionen för robotik vid Kungliga Tekniska Högskolan i Stockholm. Hon utvecklar sociala robotar som möjliggör effektiva och engagerande långsiktiga interaktioner med människor. Det här är Sköna Nya Värld, en podcast om framtiden.
Could it be the next step of human evolution?
Six and a half billion people, 9 billion people, 8.3 by 2025, 9 billion by 2050 now, and
human evolution.
Where are we going? We don't need roads.
Welcome to Yolanda Leite, right? Is that correct?
That's correct.
I was going to ask you, the first question is, what is a robot?
Okay, so there are many definitions, but a very general definition of a robot is a machine that has sensors to perceive the world, has some sort of computing ability to reason about the world and take actions on it, and also actuators that enable it to change the world or take effect in the world. So there's these three main components: sensing or perception, reasoning, and action. Makes it a robot.
Okay. So if you talk about something that's like getting more popular, like Amazon Echo or Google Home or those kind of devices that you can kind of talk to and then they reply in some sense and they execute maybe orders or so forth, are they a type of robot then, or...?
So they definitely can perceive the world, right? So they have speakers and they have language understanding components. They have some reasoning abilities, but they don't have a way to change the world. So they are a sort of disembodied robot. So the most common term that people use for those devices, I guess it's more like an intelligent speaker or a virtual assistant. Other than a robot. Although you can think of a very close future where these devices will have also some sort of body that also makes it easy for people to understand what they are saying. So I just noticed that you had nod when I said this. If you speak to your Amazon Echo and Echo is able to perform some head nod or acknowledge that it understood you in a very intuitive way for us humans, that would be a very good thing. So you can think of these devices as a sort of like evolving towards becoming more and more robot-like.
All right. Yeah, I see. It feels like it needs a part to be mechanic. It needs to be some moving parts for it to make up a robot.
Yeah, I would say so. So yeah. This part of actuation, yes.
Yeah. How far along are we in the development of robots right now? Like, would you say they're at an early stage? Are they getting very advanced? Or is it moving forward very quickly?
So it's definitely moving forward quickly. For example, with autonomous cars, that you can consider them to be robots because, you know, they perceive the world, they reason, they act into the world, they drive autonomously. So there are areas where this developments are happening really fast, and a lot of it driven by the advances in computing power and machine learning, artificial intelligence, and so on. But we are in robotics, and so robots are very good at doing repetitive things. In these three branches that I told you about, perception, reasoning, and action. So if you have a robot that is able to sort two types of objects to a box and do that all the time, that would be a robot that you can, it's possible to do this at the moment. Mm. What robots are not very good at yet is to adapt to new environments. So if you place this robot in a new environment where instead of sorting two things, it needs to sort four things, four objects, and these objects are fairly similar to each other, maybe the robot will not be able to generalize this. Or if you think about robots interacting with people, when we have robots in the laboratory environments, or if you have one robot interacting with one person at a time, we can maybe carry out an interaction. But once you place this robot in a very crowded environment where suddenly there's groups of people, there's people coming alone, there's children, there's adults, robots are still not very good at adapting to these novel situations and understanding how to perceive the world, respond, and act on this world. So this is where most of the research is at the moment.
And how would you say that research is going right now then? Like, how is it a long way in terms of years? When do you think that robots will be able to act with a bunch of people, you know, in a natural way?
Well, in an open, free environment that they are able to do everything and interact in all sorts of possible social interactions, we are really far away from having that. So what we do is we try to isolate the problem, right? We start to trying to make something that works well in a specific environment. So if you want to work on a robot assistant for the elderly, you try to create robots that are able to interact with elderly people in a constrained nursing home, for example. Or, you know, if you want robot tutors for kids, you start working on a very specific tutoring interaction with one child first, and then you move to two, three. So you need to gradually evolve from these constrained environments to this open world unstructured environments where anything can happen and the robots need to quickly adjust and adapt to that.
What does social robot mean? What is the definition of a social robot?
So for me, a social robot is a special type of robot that is specifically designed and developed to interact with people and or around people. So these robots, their perception, their reasoning, and their actions need to take into account the social dynamics of people. So they need to understand uncertainty in the world, or they need to perceive if it's the right moment to interrupt someone doing a task, or when is the right moment to do so. Or they need to understand when people are frustrated with the interaction and maybe they need to do something else. And they need to adjust and perceive people around them and also communicate in a way that is easily understood by people. So if you think of robots now, for example, in factories, where they're just doing pick and place tasks, or a robot that is just navigating in some world, it's hard for us to understand what that robot is doing, what are their intentions, right? But if you have a social robot or a robot that is designed to interact with people, then you would want to include some expression or communication mechanisms that would allow easily people to understand what this robot is doing in this social world, to kind of like to be a easier interface with people.
Could you understand if I feel sad, like in my tone of voice? Is that something?
That's something that there's research on that, on this area called affective computing, where the goal is to create algorithms that enable robots and other systems, for example, call center agents, or even in the future, if you think of devices like the intelligent speakers that you speak to it, right? Like Amazon Echo that you mentioned earlier, detect these social cues from people is very important because they would allow you to respond in a much more appropriate way, right? If you are very stressed asking something to Google, maybe this Google assistant will... you will want to be sure that you're giving it the right response and not making the person even more and more frustrated, for example. So these social cues are very important to create these interactions between humans and machines as natural and smooth as possible.
And how would you say that research is going? That's something you're working with right now to some degree, right?
Yes. So... again, it's we can already detect some affective states, for example, from voice or from images, but they are context dependent. So, for example, one of the examples that I worked during my PhD was in this robot that was able to play chess with children, and it was able to understand whether children were you know, having trouble during the game, or they were really happy and doing great and so on. So we didn't really, in this real world environment, it was really hard to detect sad or happiness because it's also not the way people, they are not always displaying these prototypical emotions all the time, right? So it's much more subtle than that. Right. So we break down this problem into positive and negative valence. So if it's just positive or negative and not the specific emotion of negative. It can be frustration, it can be sadness, it can be anger. They are all negative emotions, but it's really hard in real world situations to have machines that clearly can distinguish all these different specific emotions. But more like if we think about affective states, that is already slightly possible again in constrained environments.
So When creating social robots, you make most of the robots are being built like either they're super cute, like a puppy, or slightly human-like, or you know they have some functionality. Why is that, and why are they built the way that they are?
Yeah, so their embodiment usually it's very dependent on what their purpose is intended to. So these robotic pets. You know, you mentioned the animal-like robots. They are really developed in order to create this attachment with the users, kind of like a toy, but a more sophisticated toy. Mm. So there's, in fact, this might seem a very tricky area to enter, but there are cases where, for example, in hospitals or nursing homes, that pets are not allowed for natural reasons, like hygienic reasons and so on. So there are research studies where these robotic pets can be used as sort of like pet therapy, where real pets cannot enter. Then you also mentioned the human-like robots. I believe there are two main reasons for researchers and companies to build these robots to look human or to be human. To appear human. The first one is because we are used to interact with each other and we know that's something that we don't have to adapt to. So if a robot smiles or if a robot performs a head nod or if it waves, we know what that means. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel in order to create a new way of communicating, say a new language to communicate with the robots, because if they are human-like, we kind of understand what they are trying to tell us. The other reason is also once you start thinking of the future and a few years ahead, when these robots navigate in our world, the world is built for people, right? So doorknobs are placed at a certain height that for us is natural, or the door has a certain height, or shelves are placed in a certain place. So there are several features that the robots will have to do that enable them to navigate in the world. So the fact that they have legs, they would easily climb stairs and so on. So I think there's these two main reasons why they are kind of biologically inspired robots, so many out there.
Robotmyror som samarbetar kan bli framtidens fabriksarbetare. Den visionen lanserar tyska Festo, som utvecklat en robotmyra som inte bara följer myrornas anatomi utan även deras kollektiva intelligens. Liksom deras naturliga förebilder arbetar robotmyrorna tillsammans med tydliga regler. De kommunicerar med varandra och samordnar sina handlingar och rörelser bland varandra. Och när det gäller hårdvara är myrorna i stor utsträckning 3D-printade. En optisk sensor under myran, ungefär en sån som du har under din datormus, låter den navigera med infraröda markeringar på golvet. Och kamerorna kan också lokalisera baserat på landmärken. Myrorna kommunicerar mellan varandra för att samordna sina handlingar och rörelser. Och små grupper kan manipulera objekt som är mycket större än de själva. På ett abstrakt sätt ger det här komparativa beteendet intressanta tillvägagångssätt för morgondagens fabrik. Framtida produktionssystem kommer att grundas på intelligenta komponenter som anpassar sig flexibelt till olika produktionsscenarier och därmed tar upp uppgifter från högre kontrollnivå. Förutom myror har Festo även utvecklat robotkängurus, fjärilar, delfiner och geparder. Så kanske har vi ett helt nytt PK- och djurvänligt robotzoo att besöka inom en någorlunda snar framtid.
There's a term called uncanny valley, which is like when, well, not just robots, but when something, you know that it's not human, but it becomes very human-like. So it's almost like it's a bit freakish.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something people obviously want them to be cute or human-like, but not too human? And how do you balance that out?
Yeah, so definitely there's the uncanny valley effect. So again, it's really tricky to develop robots that are super human-like, and maybe we don't always need it. So I think a good rule of thumb would be when you need this human likeness, you build it and then you suffer from the effects, right? So there's this trade-off between what we can build and what people will accept. There's also the problem of expectations. So the more human-like a robot will appear, the more cognitive capabilities people will expect it to be. So to give you an example, if there is a dinosaur-like robot out there, people don't know how dinosaurs look like, right? They are extinct from many, many years ago. So there's not really an expectation of how a robot dinosaur would look like or would behave. So if it does something really silly, maybe it's more acceptable by users. But if a robot is extremely human-like, then you would expect it to behave as a human. And yeah, this is where the uncanny valley theory enters, right? So there's about this mismatch between what you expect and what you see that makes this sense of eeriness. But there's researchers investigating that, for example, in Uppsala University right now. So it's something that the communities considering and trying to fight this effect and to better understand it, because the first uncanny valley theories are from the 70s, I believe.
All right, yeah. Before researching this, I saw a video where they created a robot which was kind of human-like in terms of size and order and everything. I think it was Mitsubishi or Hyundai or something like that. And the human-sized version, when it did something wrong, people almost got upset with it, you know, because they assumed that it was going to do something a certain way. But then they created a childlike version of it, and then every time it made a mistake, it was rather cute, and people quite liked it, and they didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, again, it's this notion of expectations, because you sometimes expect that a child might not always take the right action, whereas an adult, it's really tricky if an adult should do this. There's also studies on how people feel comfortable about robots that show that the most comfortable height is this childlike height, so that people don't feel so threatened about them. So yeah, there's so human-robot interaction is the field that studies all these things of how people are comfortable around robots, how they perceive robots, and so on. And there's a lot of research on how robots should look like, on how what are the best features to say, so to speak, to have.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For robots to have.
How long do you think it will be before you own a social robot yourself at home that you use in, like, everyday appliances and so forth? Do you think it's going to happen the next 10, 15, 40, 50 years, or...?
Well, it depends on what these robots will do. So there are already a few companies that are mostly now coming from Kickstarter crowdfunding campaigns that are planning to have these social robot companions that are kind of like an Amazon Echo, but with a body and a bit more advanced, that interact with some sensors in the world. So that, I believe, it will happen fairly soon, in maybe the next 5-10 years. But if you're thinking of a robot that is behaves like a maid or a butler that can unload your dishwasher and do your house cleaning chores and so on, I think we are quite far away from that to happen. Because as we were talking, there's all these problems of navigating and understanding all the different possibilities of the world. And there's a lot of problems in these three main thrusts: perception, reasoning, and action manipulating the world, that still need to be figured out before we have these robots that can do all these things around people.
So you talked about maybe helping the elderly with social robots. What are other fields that you can use them?
So the elderly is a big one because of the demographics and the demographic trends in the world, right? So there's much more people with an age that they need to assistance, and there are not that many people who want to work in these jobs. So robots can really provide a way for people to live independently longer in their homes, for example, without having to lose dignity or something. Other aspects that social robots in particular, so they can be helpful in the future. One of them, I believe it's education, for example, because so right now, kids learn at different paces. It used to be that you go to school and it's where you learn, but now they can learn from all different. So classrooms have different levels of kids have different learning paces. And so if teachers have these robot assistants that can, you know, take a group of children and practice certain subject and then report back to the teacher, so that the teacher has a good perspective of what it needs to to do or to emphasize in the classroom. That would be something, or language learning, for example, if you have a robot at home that enables you to practice languages, because it has been shown that the physical presence of a robot compared to just something displayed on a computer screen, for example, it's very good for retention of information, for a lot of things in learning in particular. Another one is collaborative manufacturing, for example. So right now, robots in factories are kind of in their own cage, right? They do this very repetitive task and the humans work in a different part of the job. But you would imagine in the near future a lot of situations where it makes much more sense from productivity and so on for humans and robots to collaborate together. So, and because then robots will be around people, there's this social aspect. They will need to anticipate what humans are planning to do, or they will need to be able to understand instructions from human in a human-like way, instead of you need a very specific interface that you need to train the person to know how to interact with the robot or how to instruct the robot. So there's these are some of the examples where I believe in the future, but it's really hard to predict, right? Suddenly someone can come up with a very good application for social robotics that self-driving, but that's not really social robots, but autonomous cars will be a big one also.
Yeah. When you talk about robots or anything, there's always people are always skeptical about the future, or not only skeptical, they can be scared of it, you know, and some of it be like robots are going to overtake the world, or, you know, they have developed AI or do this, but it could also be like smaller stuff. I've seen some quite scary looking robots being used for like military actions and stuff like that. So what's the downside of the future of robots? The way do you see it? Do you see any like scary development or any worries or?
So there were three things that you mentioned. The first one being the military robots. That is definitely a concern. And I don't think I'm the right person to talk about that or to. There needs to be rules and regulations, and politics needs to be aware of this, but definitely there are downsides. But you can think of you have a hammer, you can use it to build something or to hit someone in the head, right? Yeah. So there's always these two sides of everything. You can think of for example the autonomous cars and all this issue with, well, maybe there will be an autonomous car that will be involved in an accident and there will be some fatality. But there are studies now starting to appear where autonomous cars are actually a bit more reliable than people. And especially if all cars are autonomous, there will be much fewer accidents in roads because they are less likely to commit these mistakes that people do while they text and drive or there's always the two sides of this. Definitely there's a new branch of research, or not so new, but called roboethics, and that deals with all these ethical issues, right? Even just the fact that when an autonomous robot needs to make a decision that involves human lives, for example, so you are an autonomous car and you have passengers in your car and you're about to run into someone, if you decide to not run this person over, you would make this car crash. So there will be always these very tricky situations. And then who's to blame, right? Is it the robot? Is it the company who developed? So there will be the need for a lot of new regulations and politics, but I'm not the right person to talk about that. The other issue about the ethics and attachment is also a very interesting one, but I don't think that's a problem of robots in particular. So people are already, you know, there's all these other devices like tablets, computers, social media. And I don't think that those, well, there's arguments that they are making people less social, but there could also be used in a good way to catch up with people, or there's this robot that motivates you to go and talk to your family more or to promote social interactions between people in nursing homes, for example, where it's very common that you just are in your corner and you don't socially interact. But when they have this, even a pet-like robot, the robot is the center of attention, but it not only people focus on the robot, but it promotes social interaction between the groups. So there's always the two sides of these problems, and I think that's the main... And with robots in particular, there's this notion from science fiction that robots are going to take over the world and they will be really evil. And I think that one is really silly one. And maybe it's because I know how robots work in a way, and but also maybe it's my job to try to convince as much people as possible and to communicate what robots can actually do and what can't do, so that people are not scared about all these things that they read and see in movies, because we are really not going into that direction for sure.
So when you work with robots now, how much focus is it on the mechanics of it all, the actual physical robot and building that and movement and everything, and how much focus is on the actual software, the AI and so forth? How do you develop it, and what's more important?
So all parts are important. The way we divide research is... not everyone does everything, of course, so we have these abstractions, right? So there are people working more on the perception side of things, on computer vision and developing algorithms that will enable these robots to perceive the world. There's people working on the actuation side of things, right, that build actual robots and are focused on the mechanics and it being very accurate and be able to... And then there's the more computer part of it, like the AI and the reasoning. So there's different components. And so the social robotics is a special part of it because you need a little bit of everything, right? But the idea is we don't reinvent the wheel, and we try to, of course, use from different areas certain algorithms that we can apply and that make the task easier, but there's a stronger need for integration and to make all these components work together. But there's different branches of research that are more focused on specific parts of robotics or
I can what are the like the biggest robotics companies right now, or is it mainly research teams? Because we can imagine that if I don't know, Google decided to make like a proper robot, they'd have pretty good software already, or maybe they're more inclined to work on the AI part of it, whereas more, I don't know, Apple or something, I don't know, whatever it would be, but more hardware-based company would think differently, I don't know.
Yeah, so in fact, a lot of these companies that you mentioned, there's rumors, or some of them are true, that they are in entering, for example, the autonomous driving vehicles. Right. But for social robotics, there are a few companies. For example, there's a company in Sweden, Forhat Robotics, that has one of the first social robots that is extremely robust. And it's being sold mostly right now to research institutions to investigate and advance research in this area. But there are not, there's no big player yet. This is still a very recent area. And only recently we are able to have these robots that are robust enough to be deployed in these real world and social environments. So it's still a little bit in development. A lot of the companies that are starting to appear are mostly based on crowdfunding and or spin-offs from research universities.
Greetings, my friends. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
You just mentioned a Swedish company, but it feels like every time I check up on robots online or something, there's always something happening in Asia. In like South Korea, Japan, maybe China, are they further ahead in terms of robots?
That's true. They are. So there's a huge need in those countries because of the demographics. So they really try to advance research in this area because they have really demographic needs for that. The Japan, for example, has an extremely aging population. Mm. Without generalizing, but the Asian countries usually have a stronger focus on the robotics part of things. So you see very human-like robots, super advanced robots that can climb stairs or, you know, I think Europe has mostly the strongest part is more on the AI and our computation and social interaction part of things. So different parts of the world are focused on different problems. And you see that when you go to conferences and everyone interacts together. But I would say both or Asia, Europe and the US is where most of the research in this area is coming from. And there's investment also, and the EU, for example, or Swedish agencies, they understand the need for this, the same in Japan and so on.
Have you seen any technological breakthroughs or anything that within robotics lately that you've been really impressed by? Any research done or anything?
So it's hard to say that, oh, suddenly there's this paper. Research comes step by step. But clearly the recent advances on machine learning and neural networks and deep learning are enabling certain things that until recently we were not able to tackle so easily. But also, so all these companies, for example, the self-driving cars, I think that's really impressive. So it's not research anymore, it's an engineering problem, or there's still a lot of research, but they are really moving these robots into the real world, right? And they're really in roads and driving. So that would be one of the major breakthroughs. But you can, if you think of speech technology also, for example, when you have Amazon Echo and you can just speak to it and will understand what you're saying, that's also very good. And all these things will also be useful for robots, right? So we can use all this technology in order to build more capable and more socially intelligent robots in the future. So all these different advances in different areas are enabling that we are really able to create these robust technologies that are capable of interacting with people in real world environments. So, yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Du har lyssnat på Sköna nya värld, en podcast om framtiden. Har du själv frågor om framtiden eller förslag på ämnen som du tycker vi ska ta upp? Skriv gärna en rad på vår Facebook-sida för Sköna nya värld. Podcasten är producerad av The Motor. Jag heter Annika Gritti. Musiken är gjord av Viktor Eidhagen. Och producenterna är Andreas Eidhagen och Annika Gritti.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.